And there you'll find an extended interview. Stay with us and be right back.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. We gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month better than a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Here at KUCI, we have a diverse selection of public affairs shows to offer listeners. Some of your favorite PA shows have changed times for the fall quarter. These shows include Counterspin, now from 1 to 1:30 p.m. on Saturdays, Planetary Radio, now from 1:30 to 2 p.m. also on Saturdays, Privacy Piracy, now from 8 to 9 a.m. on Mondays, and Out the Rabbit Hole, now from 8 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays. If you can't catch these shows at their new times, no need to fret. All PA programming is podcasted and is available at www.kuci.org/talk.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at kuci.org, and you can find us on iTunes at Public Radio under KUCI FM. I'm still Barbara DeMarco Barrett here with you. First half, we had Brett Anthony Johnson, and we are back now with Jinsie Willett. Let me just tell you a little bit about her. She is the author of Jenny in the Jaws of Life, which... David Sedaris said, I'm prepared to wear a sandwich board for this book. I can't help myself. It's just too good. It's just the funniest collection of stories I've ever read, perfectly funny and perfectly sad at the same time. She's also author of winner of the National Book Award, and the book we're primarily going to focus on today is The Writing Class, a novel published by Picador. Jinsie lives in San Diego, California. Let's bring her on. Hi, Jinsie.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. You know, you are just funny. Are you funny in life? Are you a funny person?
I guess so. I mean, I According to my editor, I am. I mean, I have to be funny now. If I wanted to stop being funny, it's just too damn bad. No, I'm an introvert, so, yeah, I'm funny, but mostly by myself, you know? I mean, I crack myself up, and I happen to be around other people, but I'm not a clown. It's not that kind of thing.
Right. I hope not. Well, you know, I've never met you, but somehow I feel you permeating every pore of this book, the writing class that I just finished. It's just wonderful, and I don't know if when I mean I should have gotten it from the cover with a sketch of a person, sort of the outline of a person lying on a carpet or lying on the floor dead with a pencil through them. But it was interesting the sort of mystery that it was, because it's not at all your typical mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting how this, you know, we're dealing with this writing class, and it sort of reminded me of a modern, you know, Agatha Christie, everybody's on a boat sort of scenario,
yeah.
Except they're all in
yeah.
a writing class. Will you tell me how this book came about?
It started off, I was just years ago, I mean, like 15 years ago, before David Sedaris started being so wonderful, and before I even wrote the first novel, I was trying to get myself writing. I'd come out here, and I wrote the first chapter of this, and I thought, maybe I can just dash off this silly mystery and publish it under a pen name. Why I would want to do that, I don't know, but I was embarrassed that I was writing a genre novel. But so that's how it started. It was just, and the thing is, I'm so cheap. And I have so few ideas that after my little emergence onto the stage, when my editor asked if I had anything else, I said, "Oh yeah, I've got this thing." So I finished it because I really didn't have anything else. So that's how. And I'll tell you something: I'm never going to write another mystery. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was getting into. I thought because it was genre, it would be like fast and dirty. It's just the opposite. It took, you'd think that I was writing, you know, War and Peace or something. It just took forever because there's so many characters in it. It's just, usually I have like two or three or four characters tops, and because characterization is very important to me as a writer and a reader. And these, they were like mice. I mean, they were just all over the place. Awful.
Well,
and it was very plotty. I mean, you can't write a mystery and not be plotty.
Right.
And I wasn't used to that either. So it was I have great respect for people who write mysteries now.
Hmm.
Whether they're great mysteries like Ruth Rendell or, you know, no matter who it is, I think good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm never going to do it again.
Well, another thing I liked about the book an awful lot was that there's a lot of writing instruction throughout.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
That part was easy.
Amy, the writing instructor, is an interesting character because she's trying to stay closed off from
right.
life, closed off from people, but this group of students pull her in.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Amy.
Amy is the only reason probably that I finished it, just because, I mean, to me, you know, ostensibly it's a mystery and it's about who did this, you know, who did it, but actually, if there weren't a real story going on about the sort of glacial movement from a totally closed off state to a slightly less closed off state at the end, I don't think the novel would really have engaged my own interest enough to keep it writing. I mean, to me, she's the character, she's the story, and the mystery itself is an entertainment, but anyway, that's what I thought. I mean, she's certainly the only really strongly developed character in it, although I did a few other good characters. But
And she has such a sort of sad story. I found her when we'd go into her sort of backstory, go into her past, found
mm-hmm.
it just so sad.
Oh, it's terrible. She hasn't really started her life. I mean, she's had tragedy and all that stuff, but everybody has had tragedy in their life by the time they get to be her age. But she hasn't really completely engaged with life, and she's fine with that until until she's sort of pulled out into it by these ridiculous events. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm doing a follow-up. I'm working on a novel now that's a follow-up to that, and it's going to be about her. I mean, I'm forgetting, it'll be a follow-up to the mystery, but it's not going to have a mystery in it. It's just going to be Amy. Because I think she's worth going on with.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. I'm going to see her again. So that's interesting. You're going to do a follow-up without a mystery. So when you're writing... Well, I'm going to guess that you would consider what you're following it up with a literary novel, or would you consider it mainstream?
Except, you know, I'm like, you know, Updike said, and I can't quote him, but something about when he started writing novels, he was just writing novels. He didn't realize he was writing lit. I really hate the whole, I hate the chick lit thing, and the, you know, I mean, it's just, it's a novel. They're all novels, but right. It's not going to be genre.
So I guess it's I mean, all the categorizing, so they know what shelf to put it on.
Exactly. Gets to be
a bit much.
I'll tell you something else. Yeah. If you write a genre novel, and I didn't know this, I figured this will probably sell better than Winter, and I think it probably did, or I don't know. But what happens is it gets reviewed as genre. So if the Times reviews it, they'll review it with the other mysteries. It won't be taken, you know, seriously enough to get its own review because, oh, it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who's thinking of, you know, doing that, that's just my caveat.
And yet I wonder, because there's such a mystery community. I mean, there's mystery bookstores and there's all these, you know, Mystery Writers of America, Left Coast Crime Conference.
Wonderful.
And so I'm wondering if, you know, on the other hand, in writing a genre novel, you gained readers that maybe didn't know about you before.
Absolutely. I think that definitely works. And that was nice. Now, a lot of them, I mean, if I take blogging fairly seriously just because it's actually wonderful to be able to see very frank feedback from readers. And as you probably know, bloggers give you that because they're just out there doing it for free, saying what they think. And so a lot of hardcore and not-so-hardcore mystery readers were annoyed by the book because I didn't kill anybody until page 200 or so. I don't get that. I didn't know there was a rule that you had. But it was gratifying that some of them, that I got a lot of positive feedback that way. People were actually cared about who did it and were surprised or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. You don't want to do a...
So in writing then a follow-up, are you, I mean... Okay, so a genre mystery needs plot, and you have to think about plot. What pulls you on in a non-genre novel? What are you after? Are you waiting to see how the character unfolds and following character, or do you have some general idea of what you want to have happen, and then you pursue that idea? What are you doing with
that? When I wrote short stories, I always knew where I was going. And when I wrote Winner of the National Book Award, I knew where I was going. But with the Amy novels, I'm never quite, I don't know where I'm going. I'm just seeing what happens. So to me, the pull for me as a writer is to just see what happens. And something has to happen. I don't want to end up just splashing around for 300 pages and stopping. You know, there has to be some narrative pull. There has to be tension. You know, what your previous interviewee was talking about is dead on. I mean, there has to be a reason to something that the reader is waiting for. And the thing that the reader is waiting for, the writer is also waiting for. You know, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But as a writer, I quite often do have a last scene in mind. The interesting thing about that, you know, I don't know how I'm going to get there. And so that's the suspense for me, is what will I get there? And when I get to that last scene, to that last line, will it have been worth it? You know, it's pretty frightening, actually, because you think, boy, if I can get there, it's going to be great. It's like, you know, you see this great thing out off in the distance, and you're crawling on your hands and knees.
Mm-hmm.
And then the closer you get to it, the smaller it often looks, you know. And then it starts to look like, boy, that's ugly. And then, you know. So anyway, I don't know what other writers do, but that's what I do.
Will you read to us from the writing class?
Pardon?
Will you read to us from...
Oh, okay, I could. Let me see.
Just a little bit. Give our readers a taste, and if you just tuned in. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm with Jinsy Willett. Her novel is The Writing Class, and it's published by Picador.
Okay, this is from toward the end when everything is closing in. There have been people who have been killed in her workshop. She's all alone. She's totally freaked out. She knows that the sniper, the unknown workshop member who's going to, who's terrorizing everybody, is going to call her. So she leaves. She takes a basset hound, Alphonse, and she leaves. Amy and Alphonse walked and walked until he lay down in a parking lot and refused to budge. They were over a mile from home in a strip mall with a Ralph's and a Staples and a pizza place where, according to the neon slogan, the dough was so fresh that you cooked it yourself. She had succeeded in blistering the balls of both feet, but not in putting the genie, that hand, that letter, back in its bottle. And she knew that no matter how long it took her to get back, her house would be no kind of refuge. So she took her time. She gave him 10 minutes and then crooned, "Donut." And he lumbered to his feet and trotted out ahead of her, pulling her home. She stopped at a donut stand halfway there and bought him a raised glazed. A passing jogger censoriously regarded the tableau this made. Amy glared back and almost tripped the woman. She had planned to take her time getting home, but as she watched Alphonse lick sugar off the grass, she realized that it was already afternoon and soon the shadows would begin to lengthen. She needed to get inside before that happened. When they got home, she locked and double-locked and checked the answering machine and dragged Alphonse through all the rooms in the garage. No window was left cracked open. She cleaned the house and laundered the bedding and towels and straightened out the kitchen cabinets. She kept moving. Night came quickly anyway, as it always did out here in the West. No twilight. You turned your back once, and then you were mugged by this sudden darkness. And then there were endless hours ahead of dark and dark and more dark, and this was going to be a bad one. Amy could tell because when she switched on all the lights, it didn't help one bit. Even with the blinds drawn and curtains down, she felt on display in some diorama, frightened suburban woman. She fed Alphonse but could not feed herself, and the wine parched her throat. She tried watching a movie and had to stop because she couldn't hear past the noise of the television. She tried reading but could not hold so much as a sentence in her mind, so abrupt was every creak and clock tick in the house, so unnatural the sound of her own breathing. When the phone finally rang, as she knew it would, it was a relief.
Thank you so much. That was Jinsy Willett reading from The Writing Class, a novel published by Picador. I wanted to ask you about something you said when you were on the show last with Marie some time ago. And it's one thing I always remembered. You know how certain sentences stick out in your mind? You hear somebody say them and you can never forget them. You, I think it was toward the end of the interview, and you said something to the effect of writers write too much. Like we're putting down too many words. We need to stop every so often. Will you talk about that? Because I'm wondering, first of all, if I heard it right, because I didn't go back to listen to the interview, and then if you'd say a bit more about that.
I think that at first place, I don't know why everybody wants to write. I mean, there's so many novels being published, and I'm sure many of them are just absolutely wonderful, but nobody's reading all of them. I don't care how devoted you are and how much time you have in your hands. It's not like when Dickens was writing, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not being... And in the second place, let's say you write a really wonderful... Let's say, like Fitzgerald, wrote a book that will live forever. Maybe you only have that one book in you, but you're going to end up... unless you're Salinger, you're going to keep writing and writing and writing because... Not just because you need the money, I mean, that's a separate issue and that's an honorable thing, but because it's just sort of generally assumed that you have to always be working on a new novel. I think sometimes we've said what we had to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying that's true of everybody, but I'm kind of spooked by how many novels get written, especially by established writers, especially by people who really did something wonderful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're not a writer. No matter what you did in the past, you're not a writer unless you're still slaving away. And I just find that for me, I don't need to write unless I'm engaged by something, unless something really interests. I mean, if I don't have anything to say, I'm not going to write. And I would like to see more of that, which means less of... I just think it'd be better for everybody. Plus, you know, I think it'd be great if there was a moratorium for like a couple of years at least, or maybe 10, where, and of course, the publishing world would die, and obviously it's not going to happen, but we could all stop and read what's actually been written. I mean, what a concept.
It's true. It's true. I mean, I keep buying books. I buy new books. I buy used books. And yeah. I keep buying them because I love them, and I know I just cannot possibly read them all, but they're there.
Right. I know. And it's wonderful and all, but it's, I don't know. It bothers me. I just read a year or so ago a wonderful book, my favorite book, in a long time, it's called The Siege of Krishnapur, and it's by a man named Farrell, who died in some ridiculous fishing accident in Ireland, and it won the Booker Prize in, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and it's wonderful, and I just found it, you know? It's better than anything that I've read, including my own stuff, anytime recently. Hmm. And I'll bet you anything, you can't find many people who have read it, because of course they can't. You know, that's yesterday's news.
The Siege of Krishnapur.
Siege of Krishnapur is wonderful, wonderful. It's got everything.
Okay. I'm going to check that one out, too.
Yeah.
Just when I need another book. and you keep a blog, yes?
Yes. Not religiously. I just, every now and then it's not one of those, you know, I ate a corned beef sandwich today blogs. It's I only weigh in if I have actually something to say or something, not my opinion on anything, but if I just have an idea for a little rant or something.
What is the URL? How can we find it?
It's just, if you do, it's jinseywillett.com. It's
okay.
www. Yeah.
Connect to that. Okay. I wanted to ask you, because we talked about revision with Brett Anthony Johnson last half hour, I wondered if you would talk a little bit about how you revise and what you're after when you're revising a novel or a short story, how you go about it. Because
I'm one of those writers who actually writes slowly and doesn't revise much. So, you know, most of the revision happens before I put it down. And I know brilliant writers who just the opposite. They just write and write and write, and then they go back and write and write, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They go through, I mean, Thurber went through something like 25 or something revisions of each piece that he wrote. I don't do that. I just, you know, I put it down and there it is. I don't mean I don't go back and fix sentences and take care of anachronisms and stuff, but that's it for me. I don't do major revisions.
And do you have readers? Do you have anybody who reads your work before you send it to your editor?
No. Oh, no, that's not true. I mean, I have two friends, whom I will not name, both writers, and we get together. It's a sort of witch's cabal, and we read each other our work in progress. So I do have that, and that's wonderful. It's very valuable. It also gives us a deadline, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, no.
Deadlines are... one of those things where I don't think, I mean, you need a deadline whether you're under contract or not, especially when you're not under contract. You need to set that deadline, and sometimes just having one other reader, one friend who's looking forward to your work can make all the difference in getting it done.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And if you're a writer like me who doesn't, and believe me, there's nothing wrong with my ego, but I don't think the world needs to hear from me. I mean, I don't think that, you know, if I stopped writing tomorrow, anything bad would happen. So if I don't have that insane idea that, you know, that I'm necessary, then I do need a deadline, because otherwise I just won't bother, you know?
Yeah.
I just, it really helps. It's nice to, and if you're a writer and you have friends, especially other writers, I mean, that's the ideal thing, but who are really good readers, it's wonderful to set up a little thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah. We're just about at the end of our time, and there's still more to talk about, and I wonder, Jinsy, if we can continue this on the Pen on Fire blog, just a little bit more, so that listeners can go there and read a bit more from you and from our last guest, yes?
Yes, okay. I would be happy to do that.
Any last words for the writers, for the novel writers listening?
I don't want to be negative here. I mean, I'm to say stop, go out and do something else. No, I don't know. Good luck is my. That sounds so nasty.
Oh yeah. It's okay.
No, look, it's worth. I'll tell you. I'll say one thing. Novel writing, fiction writing, I'm all for it. More novels, less memoirs. If you're working in fiction, good for you. Because as far as I'm concerned, that's how to get the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a positive message.
Yeah, yeah. I've said this before, probably too much. Some of my listeners are going to email me and say, "Will you stop talking about Eleanor Roosevelt?" But she has a wonderful quote that I love, which is just that if you want to get at the truth, write fiction. Because
right.
That, you know, through fiction, you can say what the truth is.
Absolutely. Well, boy, wasn't she wonderful.
Thanks so much for being on, and I'll get with you real soon with a few more questions that we can post on the blog. And
terrific.
Carry on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're
bye-bye.
Welcome. That was Jinsy Willett. Her current novel is The Writing Class, published by Picador. And we will continue this on the blog at penonfire.com. Click on the blog link at the top of the page. And in the next few days, hopefully we'll have more from Brett Anthony Johnson, more from Jinsy Willett up there, as well as we podcast shows, past shows, and who's up there right now? I think from 2 weeks ago, Lori Moore has been broadcast, and a bunch of good ones. Check out the Ethan Kanan podcast. He has wonderful things to say about writing and everything else. He's so eloquent. And anyway, this is it. This is the end of today's show. Next week, Marie will be with you with more sterling guests. In the meantime, I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and you've been listening to KUCI 88.9 FM. My book is Pen on Fire, and I will see you next time.